Good morning.
Good morning, Sensei.
I've mentioned this before, but what I want to do is, in the way this came about, over time, year after year, sometimes I find myself with nothing to say, and yet supposed to come and give a talk. And my Dharma name is Genjo, which means original silence. So I have that to contend with. So what I want to do is, over the next few weeks, probably separated by holidays and etc., but I want to talk about this chant that we do, we label here as Hungry Hearts. It's really called the Gate of Sweet Nectar. And so I'm going to go a little bit over the history. I'm not going to get into the heart of it in terms of practice, but I just wanted to start by laying out the history, how we wound up where it is today, the one that we chant. Everybody know who Krishna Das is? He's an internationally famous chanter, beautiful chanter. And he's a friend of Bernie Glassman, who, as I go through this, fits into how the Gate of Sweet Nectar got to where it is. Now remember, this Gate of Sweet Nectar is actually a ceremony that lasts for over half an hour, chants and different rituals that go on. And the chant that Stan just gave is just the introduction to this much longer service. But it's also, I think, the heart, the spirit of the service. And so Bernie went to Krishna Das, and he said to him, you know, we Buddhists have no melody. So he asked him if he could put it to a melody. And I've just blocked on what it was. But there's a chant, a famous chant that they do. And the rhythm and the tone of this fit in with this longer chant. So first time I heard it, Krishna Das did it three times like Stan did. And then he went into this Indian style, this Hindu style of chant. So it's not, I call it a chant, but it's not a chant in the usual sense, because it's more sung than chanted. And that's why. So when I started to do this, because I really knew nothing about the history of the Gate of Sweet Nectar, so I had to do a lot of reading, and I came across actually a podcast from Upaya, where Bernie gave a series of talks, five talks on the Gate of Sweet Nectar. So what I'm going to read doesn't come from me. It comes from me searching and reading and whatever, and I've sort of put it together. So anyway, to go back to not knowing what to say, or, you know, running out of ideas for talk sometimes, I was talking to Faye, and I was sharing with this. This goes back a ways. This beautiful song. And you know, how it touched me. I mean, it was like heart-opening the first time I heard this. And so, you know, so then, you know, I had mentioned that to her. And then several weeks later, you know, I was complaining, moaning that I didn't know what to talk about. And she said, well, why don't you give a talk on the Gate of Sweet Nectar? And it was like, you know, it gives me the opportunity to learn the history and all the surroundings. And then after I do that, it will give me the opportunity to share the essence of it as I see it or experience it. So we start out, this goes out to ZCLA with Maizumi Roshi. This comes from a talk, it wasn't a podcast. Well, let's call it a podcast. I can't think of the other word. What is it called when you have a site and you write things periodically?
Blog.
A blog, yeah. This comes from a blog by Bernie. So the Oban ceremony, this is him now, is a time to remember. And while I studied with Maizumi, my Japanese teacher, Oban was a time to remember ancestors. We bang pots and pans to invite all of the hungry ghosts, the spirits of the deceased who didn't reach nirvana and remained in sort of limbo of dissatisfaction. We offered them food to satisfy them, and then released candlelit boats into a stream to send the spirits on their way. So he says that the history of Oban lies between service and ritual, and early Buddhist rites for the salvation of ancestors were based on the story of Mudgayayana, and that despite being the Buddha's disciple who was most advanced in magic and communicating with the dead, Mudgalyayana could not find the right spell to release his own mother from suffering in the underworld. So the Buddha told him to free his mother, he must look not into the world of magic, but into the needs of people around him. He must offer food to the community of monks on his mother's behalf. So the basis of Ban Odan, dance performed during Odan today, is Mudgalyayana's joyful reaction to relieving his mother's pain. Now remember, this goes back centuries. And so the way I see this is not to be read literally. This is really the mythology that leads up to where we are today. So the stuff about magic and communicating with the dead, I've not had any experiences like that where I could confirm any validity to that. So I think if you study most of the world religions, there's a lot of mythology and that's magical thinking and stuff that occurs and changes throughout time. So Bernie goes on to say, introduced in the 8th century and spread during the 13th century, esoteric Buddhist priests emphasized spells as a way to feed hungry ghosts. This tradition builds on the story of another of Buddha's disciples, Ananda, who was confronted by a hungry ghost who warned him that if he didn't find a way to feed all hungry ghosts, he too would become one within 3 days. And so the Buddha comforts his terrified disciple with a series of spells that expand a food offering to become big enough to satisfy all hungry ghosts and to release them from suffering. So the Kanroman, K-A-N-R-O-M-O-N, which has been chanted in Japan for centuries, in English is called the Gate of Sweet Nectar. And this, the Kanroman, has evolved from the Oban ceremony. This is how it's changed through time. And it's called the Gate of Sweet Nectar. And historically, it was chanted each evening, and I think it might still be, at Japanese monasteries at the closing of the day. Now, this service is chanted, or was chanted, for dead people, for those who were off at war, those who were lost, those who were left behind, anybody, which nobody knew anything about. So it was sort of in honor of people who had died, but nobody knew their story. And it was also chanted to bring ancestors back home. And as I said, what we chant is only the introduction to this much longer service, in Japanese called the Kanroman, and in English referred to as the Gate of Sweet Nectar. So this is where Bernie enters into the history of the Gate of Sweet Nectar. When he was at ZCLA studying with Maizumi, he was deeply moved by this service, the Gate of Sweet Nectar service. And since this service was in Japanese and was based on Japanese culture, Maizumi, he came here from Japan, and he was trained in very disciplined tradition of Japanese teachers. But he was also intellectually and culturally a free spirit. So he did something which was unusual for a Zen teacher to do. He gave his blessings to Bernie to reinterpret the service and to make changes that would allow it to fit into current times. So what we know now as the Gate of Sweet Nectar is the way Bernie revised it and interpreted it. And this was influenced when he, in 1976, had a deep experience of seeing that we are all hungry ghosts. The homeless person on the street, the banker who never has enough money, the jealous spouse, all the people who are hungry, all the people who are dissatisfied, all the people that suffer because of those dissatisfactions. And he said, all the hungry ghosts, I felt that these hungry ghosts are me, and I vowed to feed as much hunger as possible. So that was a vow that he made, and which he certainly lived out. So part of this was that he had realized that this service was not just for ancestors, but for all hungry spirits. And again, the idea of spirits can take us into a particular place, which goes back centuries. But the spirits, as I understood it, are all of that which we are connected to, all of that which expresses life. You are a spirit. I am a spirit. We are all beings together. And in various ways, by our life experience and our desires, we can create these desires and create hunger for ourselves. And to me, the bottom line, the underlying aspect of these desires, these hungers, is the hunger for love and compassion. I mean, we create all this suffering for ourselves. And if I'm a banker, I never make enough money. So by doing that, I create suffering and I create a life that is painful. And I'm probably not very kind to other people that are in my life. And so if I ask myself, if I was asked to meet with this person, what would I have to offer a banker who never had enough? And I would say the only thing that I could possibly offer would be love and compassion. Not an intellectual intervention, not a one-up intervention, not a lot of advice, but just listening from a place of love and compassion. So this, to me, is sort of the spirit of feeding the hungry ghosts, feeding the hungry spirits. I came across this. This is just a little aside, but Bernie started out getting a PhD in aeronautical engineering. And there's this little story that he tells where they had just graduated and they were hanging out having coffee in some coffee shop. And they were all talking about life and what they were going to do. And so one of his friends said to him, Bernie, what do you plan to do with your life? And interestingly enough, a guy who had spent how many ever years it takes you to get a PhD in aeronautical engineering, his response was, firstly, I would like to live in a Zen monastery. Secondly, I would like to live on a kibbutz. And third, I would like to live on the street. Now, this is his answer after graduating as an engineer, as a scientist. So this is the guy who is in the middle of changing this or advancing this Gate of Sweet Nectar ceremony into contemporary times. His relationship with Maizumi and Maizumi's permission to take this ceremony and make it contemporary, the experiences that he's had in terms of the suffering of others, led to certain things, certain social interventions that he's created, which I think most of us know about, which are numerous. The first experience that grew out of this insight and that this revision to this ceremony was that he started street retreats. I want to live on the street. So he started street retreats. And the way they would work is he would take a group of Zen students and they would go to a place like the Bowery where there were many, many homeless people, many living in shelters, but also many living on the street. And I think I've mentioned I've had this experience. And it's a very powerful experience. And at the time that I did this, I was a social worker working with homeless, mostly homeless men. And so I did one of these because I thought it might help me be a more conscious, compassionate social worker. So anyway, so what happens is a group of us would go on the street and we would separate into little cliques and we would go out into the neighborhood. And part of it was begging. Part of it was just talking and making a connection with some of the people that were homeless. Part of it was, where do you take a piss? That kind of thing. What do you do when it's raining out? Where do you go? Where do you go if you're hungry? All of those things, a first-hand living experience on the street. And then at the end of the day, we would gather and we would talk about the experience, but not in a way like it was an experience over there that we had, like going to a baseball game. This was, we would talk from our spirit, talk from our heart, from our experience of what just happened. So it would be a personal conversation between us. And at this first street retreat, somebody said that this is such a powerful experience, we should dedicate it not just to all Buddhas, but to all people. And then Bernie says, it immediately struck me that it could be the liturgy of the streets also. And so on every street retreat that we chant, this is Bernie talking, we chant this liturgy. And then it also is chanted now, you know, of his bearing witness retreats, at the retreats at Auschwitz and Rwanda, and the, you know, out west at, in South Dakota with the Lakota Indians, Native Americans. Each one of these, this service takes place. And the beginning of the service, the whole service is the Gate of Sweet Nectar. But it always starts with what we chant here. So I think that's it. It's a brief history. But I thought it would be nice for me, you know, for me personally, but also to share this, to know a little bit of background of what we do and the meaning of this chant. So next week and probably the week after, I'm going to talk more about the heart of it and how it affects me and what an offering it is to off of all of us. So because of the small audience today, I'm probably going to, you'll have to bear with me next week, I'm probably going to go through it again so that we're all on the same page before I move on. So thank you for listening.